Welcome to the Chad Taylor Radio Show. Here's Chad Taylor.
On the line joining me for this episode, a dear friend, has been a dear friend for many years, and I'm so glad we were finally able to make this happen. Bubba Ganter is on. How are you, buddy?
Hey, what's going on, Chad? I'm great, great. I know it's been, you've been trying to do this for almost a month now?
We have, but our schedules are crazy, and I'm really happy for you. I'm glad that you've got a crazy schedule. That just means that you're keeping busy.
Yeah, I guess you got to, It gets to that point where I feel like I'm turning into my mom and stuff. I'm in bed by 9:30, 10 o'clock, and up by 4 or 5, but I got to stay busy. I go crazy.
No, I feel you, because I'm the same way. I'll make big plans on the weekend. Oh, yeah, we're going to go out. We're going to live it up. And I'm in my pajamas by like 7 o'clock and sleeping by 9. It just doesn't happen anymore.
Right. Right. Yeah. Like last night, Friday night, it's like, okay, what am I going to do? Well, of course, we're in this quarantine. I was like, am I going to do a club bubble or am I just going to go to bed? And I chose the bed.
I have to believe, though, you watched a little bit of the NFL draft.
Yeah, I watched day one. I did watch Thursday night. I wasn't able, by the time I got home for Friday night, it was the Cowboys had already picked. And I just couldn't get back into it, and I got busy. So, so far I think, a lot of teams are getting some good drafts. So.
Yeah, football was a big part of your life.
Man, it is and still is my life. And I think that's the problem. It just doesn't feel right during the virtual drafting. And, even like the first night, I was like, it just doesn't feel that. I did a video on Facebook. It's funny. I picked a scene out of the Five Heartbeats where, the Robert Townsend's music is being messed up by a piano player. And he's sitting there going, this ain't right. And finally, he pushes them over. And then he takes over the song again. And I'm like, this is what it feels like. This ain't right, but I'm going to scream with joy when they say there is going to be a season.
Yes.
So, football is definitely my life, and, then I'm also coaching up out here in Arizona. So,
what I dedicated this season to on the podcast was kind of reliving my past on the road and working with the recording artists and people like yourself, and I thought, it'd be fun to get the people on the show and relive some of those memories and then catch up with them, find out what they're up to. So, for those that don't know, we were just talking about football, but that's kind of how it all started for you, Bubba.
Yeah, it did. I was, I was the local football star, scholarships to, the college ASU, and then got hurt. And then I started bodyguarding, and that was that set the path for us to meet because, who I was with. And then years later, we connected.
Was the plan for you always to want to play professional football before the injury?
That was the ultimate plan. It was so the way I had it laid out, that I was going to go to the NFL, and then once I was done playing, I would transfer over to movies and TV. So I just had to skip a step to get to where I'm at now.
Right. I mean, here's the thing. You've always loved sports. You were a jock, but there was that side of you, too, that enjoyed the theater. It's an interesting combination.
Right. And, it's a lot of athletes that are in theaters. You'd be amazed that in Hollywood how many football, basketball players that are very talented, actors and comedians and, singers and stuff. It's a lot. It's quite a few. And so, I was doing local theater and stuff when I was in high school and, even younger than that, elementary school. I was always acting and doing stuff. But nobody really saw that was my passion.
No, they knew you as the jock, the guy out in the field making the plays happen.
Right. And it's, and there's a point that I felt like I was playing football for everybody else and not me,
Yep.
And it happened. You'll hear a lot of athletes go through that at some point. There's no, why am I playing, There's a brief instance where you lose that joy because everybody has such expectations on your life and what you're going to do. And, when you're in high school, that can be stressful. I mean, nowadays it's norm. But when we were coming up, our generations, it wasn't normal like that. It was, you know, that they push sports like that.
So take us back. The injury happens, kind of derails the plan that you had put together. How in the world did you go from that plan to then being a bodyguard for the biggest pop band on the planet at the time, New Kids on the Block? Tell us that story.
Man, it was, so I got hurt. You know, I blew out my knees. I blew out my back. It was like I just couldn't stay healthy. And at that point, it was like, you know, my football career is over. So I was fortunate to work security at a company in Phoenix that did the security for all the concerts that came to town, which is called VIP Event Services. And the owner of the company, he was Axl Rose's bodyguard, and he had a really great name in the industry, Earl Gabaldon. And so from there, he took me under his wing, and he was like, you know, so the very first person I ever did was Dolly Parton.
I didn't know that.
And yeah. So I did a few days with her. And then from there, I was with Milli Vanilli. And went, you know, travel with them to the West Coast. And then I already knew I was coming out with New Kids because we had had a couple people that was out with them already. And so they were going to revamp their whole security team. And so they actually got us. Because at that point, you know, back then, most bodyguards were just buddies, you know, people they knew from the street. There was not no, you know, they weren't using companies and stuff like that. So we were able to come in, and there was also a company called Contemporary Serve or something like that. And, you know, so they had people out, and we had people out. And so I was able to come out. And the crazy thing is, the first person I was with New Kids was Donnie. I was Donnie's bodyguard for like 3 days.
Well, how did that change?
Personalities, you know. I think Jordan and I had more of the similar personalities. And then Donnie had Robo, and you know Robo was out there, and at that time Donnie was still, you know, wild and crazy doing, you know, he liked to have a lot of fun, so Robo suited his needs more, and probably Robo probably encouraged a lot of it, where we're trying to discourage doing the crazy stuff, and so that's how that worked out. But me and Jordan had more of the similar personalities.
Now, were you offended when you were asked to switch band members, or did you just didn't care?
I didn't care at that time. I didn't care, but I'm happy that it worked. I mean, I love Donnie. Don't get me wrong, I love Donnie, but I'm happy it worked out the way it did because, like I said, we had similar interests. You know, with me singing, like, I love to sing, I love to dance, and I was with, you know, Jordan, who was a creative genius, and you know, we were sitting in an apartment. Like I actually lived with him in Boston, and then in the Essex, and you know, we would just sit, and I would sing with him, and we would do stuff and sing and dance, and just, like I said, we were just so similar. And at that point, you did not see him, you didn't see me. You know, I went everywhere. Like, I didn't have no vacations. I was with them 24 hours, 365 days a year.
Yeah, people don't realize that. I mean, if you were spending holidays. You were spending holidays with their families, not your families.
Exactly. And, you know, and I think that's why I don't care for holidays too much now. I know that's a sad thing to say, but Thanksgiving is, like, probably one of the hardest holidays I've ever had to celebrate. The first tour that I was out with them, we were in Germany for Thanksgiving. And it didn't bother me then because we was in a different country. And, you know, and it was like, you know, there's like 500-600 people, crew members there. So it was like a family. But then the next year I was in Essex and I just remember waking up in tears, you know, and it was like, wow, you know, I'm with his family and nothing against the family. I was just sad that I couldn't be with my family because I'm in the United States and now it's a family affair. And from that point, I just kind of blocked out Thanksgiving altogether. So throughout the years, I've never really celebrated Thanksgiving.
Who was John's bodyguard at the time?
His name is Dana Mulay.
So you would see Dana, I imagine, quite a bit then when you would celebrate holidays with the Knight family because, of course, Jordan's brother John was in the band as well. So I imagine you and Dana had a good rapport.
Well, and me and Dana, we had a rapport beforehand because we was always partnered up when at the concerts and stuff. Like, we were the supervisors, we were the leads. And Dana and I would walk together. So we had a really, really, really good rapport with each other. And so it was really nothing different. I'm not sure how he felt about holidays, because, like I said, he was with John and, Jordan and I, we would spend most of our time in Boston, then at the farm. And then so we would see each other prayer, but we all did our own thing. We still did our own thing. You know, it was whenever I'd be out in the pasture and, just whatever, riding the motor, the dirt bikes. And he was more into the work. He was more of a workout person than I was. So he was always working out.
You were naturally big. That's the thing. You didn't have to work at it. That was just your natural build.
Right. And this natural strength, I could go in there and not work out for 2 weeks and go in there and lift like I've been working out the whole time. And it was one thing we all did as bodyguards when we were on the road. We all worked out every morning with Danny. And we unofficially started a group saying, we would find each other. If we had to wait for you at the van, we would find you. If you were eating red meat, we would find you. just anything that'll help each other, to stay healthy and stay fit. And that brings up a story. It's one of the other bodyguards, Danny's bodyguard, what's his name, Randy Jones. We were in San Antonio, and it was the funniest thing. It was just me and him, and we were in the mall. It was the one opportunity we got to go out by ourselves. So we're walking through the mall in San Antonio, and we see these people walking with this big old juicy hamburger. Now, mind you, we haven't ate red meat in probably 6-7 months.
Oh, wow.
And we see these burgers, man, and it was like they look so good and tempting. But we look at each other. We're trying to figure out how can we get this burger without being caught. And so we came up with this bright idea. Okay, we're going to eat the burgers, but we're going to eat some X-Lax as soon as we do it.
Man, that... You did it.
Oh, you talking about dumb bodyguards? That was a dumb bodyguard move. So we ate this burger, and then we ate at X-Lax. Man, that was the worst 3 days. Because first of all, our bodies wasn't used to eating that red meat. And so we were having effects from that. And then when the X-Lax kicked in, you already know what's going on. And being on a tour bus, too. And the number one rule on a tour bus.
Don't shit on the bus.
Exactly. So, and that was painful, and it was funny because I was on the bus with Jordan and John. So Jordan, John, Dana, and myself, and then Lawrence, who was the vocal coach. So we was on one bus. Everybody had their own buses, so. But it was painful, We couldn't go in. Whenever we stopped at a truck stop, boy, it was running off.
Did you ever admit to it? Did you ever tell Danny? Because, Danny is a ball buster by nature, still is.
Nope.
Well, now he knows.
Not to this day. He may know now. After listening to this, he may know. But until that day, we didn't say nothing. But it was a great bonding, even no mentioning Danny. It was a great bonding experience for Danny to be able to do that, because he was. Danny was Danny, and it was hard to take Danny sometime, and then we just kind of grew into it.
That's so funny that you say that, because that's exactly how I explain it to a lot of people. Is that Danny is like his own person. I've never met anybody quite like him to this day.
Right.
It's just but I'll tell you one thing. He's still as disciplined as ever when it comes to working out and eating. Still to this day.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I've seen some of his Instagram lives, and it's good. And, the last time I saw you and Tracy were at, he did a solo show in Hollywood. And, and I think it was a surreal moment when Danny saw me, it was like, he actually lit up a little bit and we talked afterwards and, we never had that close bond, but I felt then that we were there, I really appreciate Danny and, the discipline that he's kept, because being a ball player, we were disciplined. And then when you stop playing, a lot of times you get undisciplined. And that's kind of what happened to me.
Danny has a special way of showing somebody that he cares, doesn't it? He's not outwardly about it. You just know.
Right.
And by the way, when I say being a ball buster, that's actually his way of showing affection. Like, that's right. How I took it. It was always in good fun. It was that I knew he was treating me as a brother when he was doing that. Because if he didn't do that, then something was wrong. You know?
Right. If he didn't have, exactly. So, you know, and all five guys have their own personalities. And it's crazy. And, you know, like, even now, I'm closer to John than I am to Jordan. Because, you know, Jordan is just his own person. Jordan goes off into Never Never Land. And, you know, when he starts thinking and starts twirling his hair, you know he's not there. Just leave him alone. He's not there. He's somewhere else. And but I talk to John quite often. You know, we still talk, and you know we're closer now than we were then. But I love John. And then and it's funny because right before you called, Jordan was on Instagram Live, so I was watching a little bit of that right before you called.
John is just the sweetest person. He really does. He wears his heart on his sleeve.
Yes. And even, you know, he was different during the tour, and it's not because of his, you know, what we all know now. It wasn't because of that. John was just John. And he was more about the crew, you know, making sure everybody was taken care of. And, you know, and I learned a lot from him, and that's the way I am now. Like, so when I'm on set, you know, the crew love me because I love the crew. And I will speak to everyone, and I would learn all their names. And, you know, like, I remember one of my castmates was like, how do you know everybody's name? Because I take the time to learn it. You know, it's a difference, you know, and, you know, some actors just don't care.
I remember when John actually came to see Danny perform for the first time as a solo artist. It was a show in Boston. I think it was at the House of Blues, if I remember right. And when John saw Danny hit the stage, he just started to well up with tears. They hadn't seen each other in years. I don't think they had seen each other since Danny's mom had passed. That's how long it had been from that point until the time he saw Danny on stage. And then backstage afterwards, it was incredible to watch that moment because they hadn't spoken. They hadn't seen each other. But there was this bond still there. And I think there was this pride for John to see Danny kind of being front and center, because in the band it was always Jordan, Joey, and Donnie up front, Danny and John kind of in the back, and it was Danny's moment to shine. It was all about him at that point, and I think John just was filled with pride and emotion, you know. So
exactly, I mean, it was the same thing when I saw him. I forgot what the venue was, but in LA, but it was like the same thing. It was like that moment, like, holy shit, that's Danny. Because we're so used to seeing him just playing the, you know, the member, that group member role.
Right. He was the guy that danced and was in the back and did the background vocals, sang lead on occasionally, but, you know, that was his role. But when you watch him step out front and center, people realize, my gosh, there's a lot of talent in this guy. Incredible songwriter, can play the guitar, can play multiple instruments. He writes his own material.
Exactly.
And I said this on another podcast. People don't realize that out of all the five guys, he has released the most solo material.
Right.
That's
I didn't know that.
Shocking. Yes. And so that's there you go.
Yeah. And I was proud of him. And I told him that night, man, I'm proud of him. I said, I didn't know, you know, because he did his thing. Because everybody, you know, it was always about Donnie, Jordan, and Joe. It was always about them. And, you know, I mean, and like I said, he was talented then. But when you have those guys up front, when you got five guys with talent, it's just, you know, somebody's going to be more popular. But I'm so proud of Danny and, you know, that what he's done. And people only realize John, how much talent John has.
Exactly.
You know,
yep.
You know, he was just shy and didn't show it much, you know. But, you know, they all were very talented, you know. And it was a great experience. And it's led to great things for me. And I owe being with them to where I am today. I give them credit because they put me out in the spotlight.
Were you working at the time, too, with Biscuit? Because Biscuit became a character then. I mean, he was in the New Kids on the Block cartoon, and people just really started to recognize him as being associated with the band, much like yourself after that pay-per-view, that massive pay-per-view that you did with them. Then people started knowing who you were. But what was the relationship like with you and Biscuit, and were you bodyguarding at the same time?
So I came in at the end of Biscuit's run, and he was just getting ready to put his album out. So me and Biscuit became instant brothers, you know, because we first of all, we kind of look alike, At least that's what everybody says.
Oh, I can see that. Yeah, I can see that.
And so Biscuit has been, you know, instrumental. He was very instrumental into where I am today as well. But, you know, because it's one of them things, you have jealousy. When new people come in, there's going to be jealousy. Because, you know, not everybody likes Robo. I was okay with Robo because I get along with everybody. I was okay with Robo. Then with Biscuit, I looked at him as a big brother as well, and I took his tutelage. And so to this day, Biscuit's probably my best friend in the world. You know, I call him Steve now. But he's the one that got me my first movie role, and that was back in 94. He called because he was living in Vegas. I was living in Vegas, and we were spending a lot of time together. And I actually sang on some of his later stuff, some projects that never got to come out, and in the video, in a couple of videos. I was in, but he called me. Oh, then we did a dance show. Biscuit and I, well, he was a host of a dance show in Vegas called Club 97, and I was his co-host.
So, I have to look up this footage.
I'm still trying to find the footage. I think it only aired, it probably only aired like maybe 4 or 5 episodes, but we had some of the talent then. What was that song? Ooh, I Got Your Boyfriend. That, you know, like some of the young hip-hop artists coming up back in the early 90s.
Tracy's singing it now as you're saying it, too, right now. She's going, ooh, I got your boyfriend. I got your man.
Yeah. You know, she was on the show, you know, a couple people like that. So, but to this day, like I said, Biscuit's that's my brother. That's my brother, and we talk all the time. You know, he manages Gladys Knight now. And it's just, you know, New Kids was my stepping stone, but Biscuit was actually the one that got me to start get into the movies.
Who was the hardest member? I know you love them all. It's a tough question, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Who is the hardest member of New Kids on the Block to be around, though? You still got love for him, but was tough to be around.
Why you set me up? And it's crazy because we were just talking about it. But at that time, for a time, it was Danny. Because he's hard. He's a hard person. You know, he's never been soft. And Danny used to just walk up and just punch you for no reason. And just walk up and just punch you. And I remember one day he punched me, and I looked at him and I said, you do it one more time, I'm going to kill you. And I think that was our breakthrough. Then we started working out. And this is before we was working out together. So, and I think that was our breakthrough. And then I think with Joe was kind of hard. Because Joe was the youngest, and Joe didn't grow up with them. So he had something to prove, you know. But, you know, it was never to the point where you just hated nobody. You just, everybody just had their own personalities. It's just like when you run with a crew, there's always going to be that one or two. You just say, oh, God, here they come. But, like I said, we grew up in Joe, me and Joe had some similar ties. We worked with this comedy sketch show called TMI in LA, and you know, and he's a great guy. They're all, as we're older, you look at that stuff and there's the silliness, and like I said, I got respect for all of them.
Did you ever have to break up any fights between the two guys, any of the guys, like when they would go at each other?
Not between them. You know, when they did that stuff, it was normally in behind doors when they had their arguments or whatever was going on. It was behind closed doors and with the lawyers and all that kind of stuff. You never really just outright seen nothing. You can tell there was tension, but you know, they were pretty good about keeping it to themselves.
You got any fun, crazy fan stories from back in those days? Like some things, maybe fans that you had to carry out of hotel rooms? Because I've witnessed you do that, by the way. We'll get to that. But like back in those days, are there any couple of stories that stand out of like just maybe craziness that you had to deal with? Like afterwards you went, holy shit, I can't believe I had to do that.
Well, the one was in London when the girls were hanging out the window in Joe's room. And Joe kept saying, there's somebody in our room. Because, you know, we would check the rooms when we come back. We're like, no, there's nobody in there, Joe. No, there's somebody in my room. No, we'd go in and check it. No, there's nobody in the room, Joe. And about another couple of minutes, he comes around, I'm telling you, there's somebody in the room. So then we hear something, and we look out, and there's two girls hanging out the window, like on the ledge. And it's like, what in the world? You know, and just, you know, just I mean, there's, I forgot so much, Chad. You know, it was pure craziness because you saw even when it was just us and Jordan, it was pure craziness at times. And, you know, the fans would just go through all limits to try to get to them. And, you know, it was just crazy. But that's probably the craziest one. You risk your life hanging out of a window. Because I could never understand. I would always say this. Why are you crying? I don't get it. Why are you crying? They're just humans, you know. Then when they started asking me for autographs and, you know, and you know, and I had a shirt that said no autograph, please, because I felt they're the famous ones. But they're like, but you touch them. You talk to them. So I got famous from association with them.
Rumors, rumors always were around that moms would approach the bodyguards and offer up sexual favors to get their daughters to meet the guys. Can you confirm or deny that?
I'm neither denying or confirming that. But no, on the real, it was the craziest thing. You know, and I tell people to this day, moms would do anything for their daughters, and I'm just gonna leave it at that. you know, but I'm proud to say I wasn't one of them type of bodyguards.
No, you never were, man. You're not that type of dude. You're really not. And that's why I love you.
Yeah, I have morals, and you know, and I'm gonna tell you what helped me, because their image was so clean that I didn't want to be the one to ruin their image. And that's what I was fearful for. And I think that saved me, because it's very easy to get caught up and do stuff that you probably would normally not do. So,
were you working with the guys, Bubba, when Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch came out on the road?
Yes. So, you know, of course, Mark was working on Donnie and Mark was working on the album On the Road. And it was the craziest thing to watch a studio, portable studio, on the tour bus or in hotel rooms, you know, because that's when Marky Mark's whole album was done, on the tour bus, pretty much. And so it added to the craziness. You know, Mark was a good guy. I loved him, and we had fun. You know, anybody that came out on tour with us, I'm sure. Each and every one. There's only one group that probably don't care for the New Kids on the Block, and one solo artist.
Who's
but
that?
Anybody that came out. I don't know if I should say.
Oh, come on now, reveal something good.
But you know, Stevie B. Yeah, I don't think he cares for the New Kids that much. But I'll just leave it there.
Because he opened for him, right?
Right, he was an opening act, and you know, and it just, you know, look. When you're an opening act, you got to stay in your lane. That's the word everybody uses now, stay in your lane. He got out of pocket. You know, he got out of pocket, and it was in Las Vegas at the Thomas and Mack Center, and he got out of pocket. And that was the last 2 days he was on tour.
Did you put him back in his pocket?
It wasn't me. It wasn't me. But, no, they had a bodyguard, Butch, as well. Butch was a beast.
Who was your favorite opener to be out on the road with? Do you have a favorite, or maybe two favorites?
Well, honestly, my favorite was the Good Girls, because, you know, we spent a lot of time with them. And they actually hung out with us, and we went to the movies and stuff, you know. So, the Good Girls is my favorite, personally, because they were real. They was just down there from real, and... Brenda K. Starr, I mean, Tommy Page, everybody. Like, what was the other one? Rick, what was Rick's name?
Rick West,
you know, so they were all good, perfect gentlemen. But my favorite was probably the Good Girls and Brenda K. Starr.
You led me right into my next question. What were your thoughts on both Maurice Starr and Dick Scott from your interactions with them? And were they limited?
Let's see. Well, Dick was a great guy. I love Dick. You know, he really cared for the guys, and you know, he would yell at us when we would let them do craziness, or you know. So I have nothing bad to say about Dick. You know, Maurice Starr. You know, bless him. You know, he's been really ill lately, but. He played that general role to a T, and you know, he was probably one of the ones when you saw him come and you wish he wouldn't come out, because you're trying to do a job, and you know, how can I say this?
Would he get in the way of doing the job, basically?
Yeah, he would get in the way. You know, and you know, you have certain things how you run a tour. I mean, you know how it is on tour. You have it's pretty much the same thing every night. You know, because you find something that works and you stick with it.
Right, you get now, a routine down.
Right, you have a routine, and he would come out and just try disrupt the whole routine, and it was just like, hey, I'm here. You know, I'm the man. You know, I run this. And you know, then he'd have an entourage of 15 to 20 people with him, and it would just throw everything off, you know. But, you know, bless him right now, like I said, bless him. He's sick right now, and, you know, prayers to him.
I have a great Maurice Starr story. So I got to know Maurice through Jordan and Danny. But when I was at Jordan Knight's wedding, Maurice came and performed at the wedding. It was just Maurice and a piano. And it was a request of Jordan's, obviously, and it was just such a touching moment. It was like a full circle moment when I was watching him perform and watching Jordan watch him perform. It was just, it was like that full circle moment. And I just, it's a memory that always stands out. Another memory for me stands out is that Maurice gave me a video camera to use to do some filming. He had all this equipment. And he didn't realize that he also gave me some videotapes that I had to finally return to him. And these tapes were like old school New Kids footage. I don't think he realized that I had them, but I reached out to him and let him know, hey, I got these tapes. I'm sure you want these back. And they were like, it was like footage of the guys overseas. I think like one was a like a first cut of like Please Don't Go Girl, the video. And he was always inviting. Jordan and I went to his studio in Orlando. But a funny story there is that we went to the studio and he was pitching Jordan a song for Jordan's EP, The Fix. You were working with us at that time. And, and he pitches this song, right? And we leave, and Jordan's like, ah, it's just not for me. It was like a song that sounded like it should have been released, you know, like on Step by Step. You know, it just, it was an older type song, you know? But the funny thing is, and I can't remember the band to save my life, Bubba, but maybe like 5 or 6 months later, this group approaches us and they're like, yeah, they tell Jordan, hey, we ran into your guy, Maurice Starr. And they're like, yeah, he pitched us a song. And then Jordan goes, oh, yeah, well, what song was it? And then they started to hum it. And Jordan's like, that's the same song he pitched me. He was trying to so desperately to get rid of this song that sounded like it, you know, was written and recorded back in 1990. But now he's a, he was, a, like you said, at, he was playing that role for that time. And I think you said this brilliantly. Because I know this goes for me, too, when I was on the road. We've all grown up. We all did things that we wish we could do differently. We behaved maybe ways we wouldn't behave now in our 40s and 50s. And so I think you said it best. And my prayers are with him because I really hope, you know, he can spring back. And the guys did such a generous thing when they were playing in Orlando. I believe three or four of the guys actually went and saw him. He was back home. He was, you know, he was sick. He was in bed, but they brought him home. And I think it was Joey and Donnie, I know for sure, maybe John, that it went. And I know that meant the world to him. If you watch the video, you can tell he lit up like a Christmas tree.
Right. And, you know, and like I said, it was when you got him by himself or in the when we were in the studio, it was a different Maurice.
Right. He wasn't the persona, the general, the persona that he put on.
Right. You didn't get that. You got somebody that was about his music and trying, hey, let's get him trying to get it going. But when he put that general's costume on and he came to the venue, it was a totally different person.
Tell the fans about the meet and greets back then when you would work the meet and greets. Danny tells me that 9 times out of 10, it was him doing just the meet and greets, that it was a lot of the guys didn't want to do them. Is that true?
That is true. You know, they just didn't. And Danny was the only one that would go 100% of the time. He cared about the fans. You know, not that the rest of them didn't, but he did. He knew that was part of the touring. A lot of times, like I said, we would never be there at the same time. We would get there at all separate times, you know. And because after a while, you know, like the first few weeks, you know, you're at sound check every day. Then it got to, if you did a sound check, great. Because by then it was honed. You know, you got it. And but Danny was always the one. And then, and if by chance, if like with me and Jordan, if Jordan would walk by and he would see it, he would step in, and you know, and he would say something. But you know, it's funny watching them now, because, you know, even Jordan and John, he didn't feel comfortable around a lot of people. You know, and he's still the same now. I mean, because I went to the shows in L.A. On his last tour. It's just, you know, he didn't really stand out, and, you know, he didn't like to be around a lot of people, at one time.
I said that on my last podcast that Jordan is not comfortable in a large setting, but if you put him in a small setting with a handful of people that he's comfortable with, it's like night and day, because, and no pun intended by the night and day there, but he comes out of his shell, and he's funny, and he's engaging, and I have so many just great stories of just, like, you, him, me, and Tracy, or me, you, him, and Jim Check just laughing and having a great time, but he just liked to be around people that he knew, he trusted, and he was comfortable with, and there's, I know a lot of people like that just are not comfortable in these large settings, but then at the same breath I say that, I'll say, but then he can get on stage in front of thousands and just turn it on, and be so crazy charismatic and talented, and it just blows your mind away when you put Jordan behind a piano and just give him a microphone and let him go to town.
Right.
It's just awe-inspiring.
And remember we'd be in hotels, and if there was a piano there, he would just sit and start playing and singing, and people would come around and invite, because that's his element. That's when he's in his element, and he's no longer Jordan, but he's Jordan Knight, you know, when he's playing. And it's like, it's his persona, you know, and so, and you know, you're exactly right. He's more comfortable when he's performing, because that's how he lets himself out. Like, I tell people, look, I did all the driving back in, you know, the New Kids days. I would not let him drive me, because he started twirling his hair, and I had no clue where he was, we're going to make it safely to our destination. But that was him, you know, and I let him, you know, he'd do his thing, and, well, I didn't let him. He did his thing, and, you know, he's a great guy. You know, he cares about people. He cares about his craft, and that's the thing. A lot of artists, when they stop caring about their craft, you start getting crappy work. And one thing you and I both know, he is a perfectionist.
No doubt about it.
And I've taken a lot of stuff. Even in my professional career, I've taken a lot of stuff I learned from him, from John, and from Donnie, you know, well, from all five guys. I've taken a little bit of all of them, and I've applied it to how I am towards people and how I treat people. Because, like I said, I didn't get it back then, but as I got older, I get it. And it's just, you know, some of the stories that... No, I don't think people realize Jordan is full of one-liners. He'll get, you know, or quick. He's quick-witted, and he'll say something. You just kind of, what is that? And it'd be funny, you know. And sometimes I think he was being serious, but it came out funny, you know. Remember when we were Notre Dame, Indianapolis? Was that in Indiana? Is that where? Yeah.
Yes.
And we're in a Holiday Inn, and he changed his room to go all the way across the other side of the hotel to get away from my snoring.
You know what's funny?
I think about that all the time, because this is before. Now I sleep with a CPAP machine.
Jim Check told a great story on the podcast. Jim just loves you, and he was telling this story, and I'm sure you'll recall this now, but... Jim is stubborn, and he's self-admitted a stubborn person. But speaking of the snoring, do you remember when we were driving?
Yeah.
Jordan and I were in the back seat. You and Jim are up front. Jim's driving. You're in the passenger seat up front. And then you fell asleep and started snoring. But Jordan didn't hear it at this point, because Jordan was already out cold. Him and I were both sleeping, so neither one of us heard it. But Jim was listening to you snore. Me and Jordan probably are snoring, or whatever we're doing. And then he started swerving the car. Do you remember this? We were on our way to New York,
yeah,
I think.
He's
swerving the car to wake us all up. And then he did it a little too hard. And I think you dropped your phone or bumped your head or something in the midst of this happening. And for anybody that knows Bubba, he has got hands the size of a bear. And he took that. You took your arm, and you swung it back behind your head and hit the dashboard of the car, and the whole thing came off onto your guys' laps.
I was just going to tell that. I was just going to say that.
And here's why I bring up the stubborn part. Because neither one of you guys would push it back. So for the entire drive into New York, you guys left the dash on your knees, on your legs. Even Tracy's laughing.
I was just going to tell that story, too. And I do. I remember hitting it, and the thing, it just collapsed.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And me and Jim, like I said, great dudes. And it was just we both were stubborn.
Oh,
we
my gosh.
Well, I call it pig-headed. We both were pig-headed. Throughout the whole to whatever, it was just we could not meet eye to eye on anything. And it was like, it wasn't that either one of us was right or wrong. We were just too stubborn, and we wasn't going to let the other one get the upper hand.
Right.
Great guy, you know, his wife, you know, his family. You know, next time you talk to him, please tell him I said hello.
Well, he passes it right back to you, my friend. He does. He wanted me to pass that to you.
I forgive him, even though there's nothing to do forgive. But, yeah, I think we had a great time, you know, back then. And I was, early 2000s. And, I cherish those moments, Chad. I cherish, you know, your friendship. I cherish Tracy. You know, Tracy was a very big part of it, where she helped us tremendously and her family. And I love when I see on the post when her family. Do you remember? Yes, I remember. That's not the only thing I remember, because my short-term memory is horrible.
That's because we're getting older.
I tell people, look, I've had 13 concussions. And I said, so whenever I forget something, I blame it on the concussions. But I do remember, you know, the time that we spent together on the road. And I cherish those moments because, like I said, all that made me to who I am today. You know, fortunate, you know, I've had a great career. I've kind of took a little bit of retirement from the career and trying to live a normal life now. So where I'm at today.
Tell everybody, you know, how it came to an end for you the first time with the New Kids. So you're out on the road. Things are going really, really great. How did that end for you?
And then it was just one thing, and it wasn't even on the road. I was in Boston, and it just came to a point where it was like, hey, we're breaking up. You know, we're not going to do nothing for a while. So it was just, it was more cheap, better for them economically to let me go. And just, you know, if he was doing something, just to hire locally. And then that's when I moved on to other groups. There was no hate. There was no love, hate, or nothing. Like, I mean, as you could tell, because I was able to come back with you guys later on.
Was that hard for you when that happened, though?
It was. It was a tremendous blow. And I will say this, I got too personal. You know, I believe that instead of remembering that, I'm his bodyguard, I saw him as a brother.
No, I know exactly how you feel.
Yeah, and I think we could have been the Robin Big. You know what I mean? That's how close we were. And I just think, but at some point, the professionalism kind of slided away, and it was more like I was his homeboy. And, you know, and so that's why when it was like, well, it's easier just to pay somebody when I go somewhere instead of paying me my salary. You know, because back then, it was a lot of money, you know, what I was being paid. Now it wouldn't be nothing. That's like, that ain't even a week's work, you know. But, and there was never no animosity. I understood because business is business. And like I said, he would text me periodically, and I would hook up, you know, whenever they come out west and do stuff, I would hook up. And so it was never, at least on my end, I don't believe there was no animosity or no hatred, because they all treated me the same anytime I saw them.
So what was next for you then, right after that?
So then I went to Vegas and started doing a lot of local stuff. I went out with Guns for a sec. Right before they broke up, you know, I was going out with them.
And boy, talk about a night and day gig, right? I mean, you're dealing with teenage girls at one point, and now you're dealing with, like, crazy metalheads.
Metal drunks and druggies, yeah. And, you know, I thought I was going out on the Michael Jackson tour, you know, right on, like, one of his last ones. And it was just up and down. And, you know, and I was trying to – I wanted a family, Chad. I could never keep a relationship on the road, so I slowed down, you know, and I was like, I just didn't know, and I played little arena ball and football, you know, and then I started managing, like, when I met you, I was managing a nightclub, you know.
I remember.
Yeah, and then that's how we connected. And
it was so good to get you back on the road, and I know Jordan was thrilled. Jordan again wouldn't come out and say something like that. That's not in his style or his nature.
Right.
But it was like it was comfortable for him, and it was like a piece of home was back with him. I mean, that's how at least I took it.
Right, and it felt great. And I believe he knows that, you know, and I tell people to this day, you know, whenever I bodyguard, they said, would you take a bullet for anybody? I said, there's only one person I would ever take a bullet for, and that was Jordan. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Because I almost did New York, you know, in the alley when they were recording. It was him and Joe were in the studio recording If You Go Away. And so back then, it was the crazy... It was like we would fly to New York and we wouldn't even say nothing. We would just like, let's go. Like, we'd be sitting at the apartment and we'd go, let's go to New York. Okay, let's go. Man, it'd be, we call New York Fan Central, because when we got to the airport, they were waiting for us. And it'd just be me and him. And so him and Joe was recording If We Go Away. And I was out in the alley. I was sitting in the van because there was about 10 fans out there. And I knew, like, we knew you had your fans, just like when we was on the road. You know, we had the Chicago 6 or 7 because it kept changing. The number kept changing. But you had that same thing back then in New York. And so I would just sit out there because I cared for the fans. I actually felt sorry for a lot of the fans, you know. And this guy comes down the alleyway grabbing his junk, you know. And I'm like, hey, no, chill, dude. These are teenagers. Chill. And like that. And he put a gun to my chest.
Did he really?
What are you Yeah. I said, what are you going to do about it? And I said, nothing. I wasn't stupid. I knew I could have destroyed him, but I was like, you know, the smart thing was, no, don't be confrontational. Just let this guy leave. I was waiting for him to put it down, and then I was going to take him out. But, of course, he was smart as well and kept it on me until he left the alleyway. But I think that's what separated me from a lot of the bodyguards is I actually cared for the fans. I wasn't mean to them. I could tell them no without making them cry. You know, then you have the ones that just didn't care.
Right.
You know, and they were rude. And you know, hey, that was their style. But that's just not me. Even to this day, I hate saying no to fans, you know, because I don't want to disappoint anybody.
So after you worked with us the second time around with Jordan, and then that ended, you really went on and just had this unbelievable career on the big screen and the small screen. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, you know, your other group, you had a group, Morgan Heritage.
Yep, you actually went out with them and toured Europe with them.
Yeah, I was in Europe with them, and then I think that's when I was like, I'm done. I don't want no more of this music stuff, you know.
No, they were a handful, Morgan Heritage, for sure.
Yeah.
Scary.
Yeah. And I think... You know, I think if you would have went out with him, I don't know if you would have made it out alive.
No, me probably not. I think you were strong enough to handle it.
Right. And it wasn't so much them, it's just that scene, the reggae scene itself. And we were in France, and we ran into, it was always a financial struggle. You
all
know?
The time with that band, all the time.
And, you know, because they still owe, I mean, I was still owed money, and, you know, and you know, it was just crazy. Like, I remember we were in France, and I literally had to grab the promoter by his throat and hang him on the wall, you know, and tell him we need this money. Because they weren't going to pay us until the last show because, you know, and they was like, we need money. We're here for 3 weeks. We need money. You know, it was unorthodox. You know, the whole tour was unorthodox.
I remember getting your phone calls and being like, oh, my God, what is he dealing with now? It was always like a 7-hour time difference wherever you were and where I was. And
right.
For people that don't know, you were operating more of in a tour management capacity at this point. So, I mean, he was the point person for everything. Man, right, I can't even imagine what you I know you were super happy to get back stateside.
Right. And once we did, then I was, you know, then we were supposed to go to on another tour. And I was like, I'm done. I'm not doing it. I can't do it. And I went to the Bahamas, and we went to St. Lucia and all that. And after that, I was like, nah, this ain't worth it. You know, so that was my end of my music, on my the music industry. But I got, you know, like I said, through all that I learned, and yeah, I did. I went on a run with TV and film. I did two movies right off the back. Well, shoot, I did three movies right off the back off of that. And then you know, I've been on The Mentalist, and I was just in the last movie with Eddie Murphy, Dolomite Is My Name. Then I was on Nickelodeon, you know, I did Sam and Cat. Then they brought my character over with Kel Mitchell over to Game Shakers and did 3 seasons of that. I've been on, you know, the Damon Wayans Jr., his sitcom. I did a few episodes of that. It's just been great, you know, and now I'm doing, I'm directing PSAs for anti-bullying and stuff. So, you know, and that's more of my passion on that side of the industry is directing and writing than actually being on the screen. But I'm also, I have 2 web series going. I actually won an award for Donna on the Go, and it's about a handicap, you know, living as a handicap. The star Donna, you know, and this how things aren't great for the handicap community. And so I did the whole season 3 of that. And I've won an award. And then what sucks is with this corona, I was supposed to go to Comic-Con on the panel, do some panels at Comic-Con in Anaheim and San Diego. We were supposed to go to Cannes next month, Cannes Film Festival. And I feel more sorry for Donna and Peggy Lane, who is the producer and creator. I feel more sorry for them because I've been to Cannes already. I was at Cannes for the movie Middleman. And... but it was going to be their first time, and I think I was more disappointed on the Comic-Con. I mean, shoot, you're on a panel at Comic-Con?
That's big.
You made it. And so now I got, and then now I have a new web series going called Rusty Camel, and it's definitely not kid friendly. But I had fun shooting that. When I was doing it, I came back to Arizona. But I would go on the weekends and film this web series. And it's funny. It's a mockumentary on The Office. If you watch The Office, you'll get it. You'll get Rusty Camel.
How can fans keep up to speed with you right now?
Well, I'm on Instagram at Bubba Ganter. And that's pretty much on Facebook. I'm at 5,000. I keep deleting people, or, you know, I do have an actors page, but I don't do much on that. But on Facebook, I'm Bubba Ganter, and if you know me, send me a message, and I'll make room for you if I can. But Instagram is probably the best way, and then of course on Twitter at Real Bubba Ganter, because I got hacked on there, and yeah, they made my life miserable my first season of Game Shakers, and yeah, just hoping, you know, got to do some stuff with you and Tracy and Little Zimmerman. Macy. I'm like, what's the name? I got to do something to get y'all Dan, Tracy, and Macy dancing.
Well, count on it, my friend. Tracy just said to me, Tracy, you can jump by the mic. I know you've been patiently listening to me talk with Bubba, but before I let you off here, because I know you've been so grateful with your time, there is one story that I have to make sure I say before I cut this podcast. Tracy even said to me, she's like, you got to do 2 with Bubba. He's got so many stories. But there's a funny one personally. If you remember, my very first trip to Des Moines to meet Tracy's family was with you. You came with, so did Jim and Amy. Jordan had a death in the family, and rather than all of us go home, it would be more expensive to fly everybody home. We just drove, I think it was from like Little Rock, if I'm not mistaken. We drove from Little Rock, Arkansas to Des Moines, Iowa to see where Tracy lived and to meet her family. And if you remember, the joke was we were going to tell her dad that you were me because you're so tall and this big guy and Tracy is like 5'1". And we kept joking, like, how hilarious would that be to tell her dad that? And you could have, like, picked her dad off his feet. You know, that would have been just so awesome. But isn't that a great memory, Trace?
It is. Man. It is. Yeah. You know what? I'm just sitting here smiling the entire time because, seriously, Bubba, every single memory with you and of Chad and I in the early days, you were involved in every single piece of that story. So I just have such great memories of us. And if anything, Bubba, I just want to say thank you because you took such great care of us, not just as a bodyguard standpoint or security or what have you, but you were just so good to us. I mean, such a gentleman in every sense of the word. And I just get such warm and fuzzy feelings every time I even hear your name. So I just want to tell you that we love you and we miss you and we love picking up right where we left off.
You know, and I thank you and I love you guys. And we definitely got to get together, do a reunion or something. And I don't know why I keep thinking about there was something that was going on in Baltimore, and I had to protect everybody. or some, I don't know if it's Baltimore, but I know we were somewhere.
No, I know exactly what you're thinking of. Maybe I'm wrong, but you might be thinking, Jim brought this up on his episode with me. We were in L.A. Do you remember going to see Flavor Flav after Jordan did the Surreal Life?
Yes, I remember that too.
Yes, and we went and said hi to Flavor Flav, and then afterwards, before he even hit the stage, a guy pulled a gun out in the audience.
Right.
And you had put us both under each arm, like you were back in your football days.
I was going to say, if I can remember correctly, I saw it coming, and that's when I grabbed y'all.
Oh, I mean, we were out the door faster than, within seconds, and by the time we went outside, Jim even recalled this, by the time we got outside, that's when the sheriff's department started locking down Sunset. It was craziness. But you went right into bodyguard mode. It was like a switch had flipped, and boom.
Right. And, and I tell people all the time, they say, why are you being nosy? I'm not being nosy. I'm just aware of my surroundings. I said, I know where the exits are. When I walk into a room, I know where all the exits are. I scan the room of the people in there, who I might have problems with, who's going to be okay, and that kind of stuff. But I remember something on the East Coast that we were about to get in. I just can't remember. I'm going to remember, and I'll bring it up. But I remember something happening on the East Coast as well. And it was at a show. Is that one of we were eating or something? No, you know what? It was in Houston.
Oh, that's right. I know exactly. We were at a diner.
At a Whataburger.
Yes, and there was a guy that just kept getting, for no reason, by the way, wanted to light it up for some reason. I think he noticed who was at the table, and he just wanted to impress the girls at his table. And
exactly.
And you weren't having it. I mean, I remember you were telling me under your breath, listen, here's what's going to happen, because. He was with other guys, too. And I remember you were plotting. You're like, here's what I need you to do. Don't worry about me. Whatever. If this goes down, I want you to go out the door with him. I got this. And I'm thinking, my God, we're not going to leave you at three, four guys. But you're like, no. You were plotting to destroy that whole table. I think, thankfully, it was just words were said. I don't think it never came to any throwing hands. But, that's funny you bring that up. I do remember that now.
So there were those.
Yeah, they were like. Yeah, they were like cholos or something like that. And I just can't remember, get y'all out of here. Because I'm trained. I'm like, look, I'm trained for this situation.
So there were those crazy days, when you did have to, put on your security hat and all that stuff. But then so many fun days, too, where, we were just family and we'd hang out. Do you remember the time we were on tour in Columbus, Ohio, and we went to my sister Susie's house and she made us all tacos? And
I was just going to say that, too.
Yeah. You remember that?
Kids bring that story up all the time. And her kids are now in their 20s.
Yeah. They all ask about you, Bubba, all the time. And And how is he doing? And, these memories just will never go away.
Well, Abby, I think, was the one that was watching him all those years later than on, Game Shakers
and all that stuff.
And just, bragging to all our friends. Well, yeah, but he was at my house singing with Jordan. And
right.
It all just comes full circle.
You and I, one more quick story before I let you off. We're right at the hour mark, but this is a good one, too. I don't even know if you remember this, but this is a separate time. Speaking of Columbus, Tracy just made me think of it. We were in Columbus, me, you, and Jordan, and we had done a show, and then we had went to, I hate to say this, but I got to be honest, we went to a strip club or something. It was something like that. And that was the same night that Dimebag Darrell from Pantera got shot in the club in Columbus, down the block from where we were, that same night. It was on the same strip we were playing.
I remember.
Yeah. I mean, there's just so many, as Tracy mentioned, when I think of these times and as I get older, I appreciate them even more now. But I appreciate, as Tracy mentioned, not just the memories, but I appreciate the friendship. And I also appreciate the fact that we can conversate like this for an hour. It felt like 10 minutes, and we can pick up right where we left off.
I tell you, if Bubba's willing to do it, you need to do part two, part three, part four
with Bubba's
him.
Got so many stories.
Find us on Twitter and Instagram at Chad Taylor Radio. And don't forget to subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform.